Hey everyone, so welcome back to another episode of the Hello Spring Podcast. I hope you're all doing well, because in today's episode, we are back once again, but this time with a guest. And so I'll be interviewing Azamara. And if you're not familiar with her, let me tell you a little bit about her. Azamara is a digital storyteller, video essayist, and a gaming content creator, merging her many creative passions to empower her audience to become and embrace their most authentic selves. With transparency, intellect, and wit, Azamara aims not to only entertain, but to inspire critical and introspective thought through her analytical, social commentary, and immersive Let's Plays. All of her links will be down below in the show notes below, but let's go ahead and hop into today's episode. Well, to start off the podcast, I wanted to say thank you so much for being on my podcast, honestly, because when asking people, I'm like, I don't know if they're going to say yes or no, but thank you for saying yes, because I'm so happy to definitely talk to you, because you have a lot of insight and knowledge, and you're just so well-spoken that I think a lot of people want to know more about you, and especially I do too, so yeah, thank you.
Of course. Thank you for having me. I haven't done a podcast before, so this is my first one.
Ooh, I'm so excited. So how has your week been so far?
It's been pretty good. I've been working on a video essay like that's supposed to go up. It'll probably already be up by the time this podcast goes up. So it's just been like an editing intensive week for me, but it's been pretty good. I feel like time in pandemic like doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
Pandemic time is very it slips away from you.
It really does. Like, I don't know the sense of time anymore. My days are all jumbled together. I feel like every day is a Friday or a Saturday. And it's like, I'm just gonna just wake up and just go about my day and hope for the best. But you know, hey.
Yeah.
You know, honestly, I've been waking up a lot earlier, like around like 9:10 a.m. and it just feels great. Like my sleep schedule.
When do you
starting.
Normally wake up?
Oh, normally
if 9 is early.
11 a.m. Sometimes noon, depending on what day it is and how much work I've already completed. Like if I complete at least 2 or 3 videos in advance, I sleep until like noon. But I like to get up early to get myself ready, prep for the day, because I stream afterwards and like at 6 p.m. So I got a lot of work to do, like editing, capturing all my videos and prepping for the podcast episodes and everything. So I try to keep myself busy by waking up early for the most part. But normally, if I don't have anything, noon.
Hey, I support that. You know, we like sleep around here.
Oh, yes. Sleep is very important. Like, I've been getting more sleep and it feels great. Like, after getting my vaccine, my first dose, I've been more tired. I only have my first dose. I'm supposed to get my second one sometime next week. So I'm very excited about that, honestly.
Okay, yeah. That's cool.
How about you?
Like, how's my week been?
No, like, have you been vaccinated yet or anything?
No, I haven't been vaccinated yet. I don't know. Information about the vaccine is kind of hard to, like, follow.
It really is.
It's been a lot.
Yeah.
I'm not.
Okay. I'm scared but excited at the same time for the second dose, because they say it's probably going to be worse, but I don't know. Anyway. So I wanted to ask you, like, how has your 2021 been so far? Because we are getting close to almost 5 months in, and it feels like it was just yesterday where we're like, we're on lockdown, do-do-do-do-do. But, like, I feel like last year versus this year has been completely different, both good and bad. But like, I want to know, like, how has it been affecting you, like in good ways or bad ways? Or like, has it been like somewhat the same?
I think 2021 has definitely been a very different experience, I guess, from 2020. Like, obviously 2020, like everything and everybody's life kind of changed. But like, I feel like 2020 was more, I was also in school that year.
Same.
I'm still technically in school. I'm taking a semester off. But I feel like I was just in a different place. And I also started my YouTube channel like towards the end of 2020. And that kind of became my focus towards the end. So like the beginning was like school and like all the schools closing down and like figuring out online classes and stuff. And then the end of 2020 was kind of like me sort of starting this more creative passion and seeing how that goes. And so 2021 has just been me doing a lot of YouTube stuff, quite honestly.
Yeah.
And just figuring out like next steps in like a lot of different fields. So YouTube or school, just a lot of different things. So it's been definitely different from 2020, I would say.
I would agree with you, because last year around May, I was graduating university for like my last semester, and it just dawned to me, like, it's almost been a year since I've graduated. Like, it felt like it was just yesterday. That's where I crazy. Graduated and having my quarter life crisis and all that stuff. Like, it was weird.
Yeah, every like major life event, I feel like, feels not that long ago. That like, happened in the pandemic.
Yeah.
Like, oh, that was, I guess that was kind of a long time ago.
Yeah. I feel like that I'm like, I would say that I'm grateful for the pandemic kind of way. Cause like most people say it was a bad thing, but some people say it's a good thing. I feel like it was both good and bad, where I'm glad it happened because it felt that I needed some sort of break of the day-to-day life of driving to school every single day and reporting to like my teachers and, you know, my jobs and everything. But I think I needed to have that step back from life where I could really think about where I wanted to go for my next step of like my 5-year plan. Like if I wanted to move, if I wanted to have like a well stable job and have medical insurance and stuff. But in reality, I think that it helped me understand that I need to work for myself and work on myself before I rely on other people. If that makes any sense. I don't know. I think it made it better for me mostly.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Like 2020 like had to happen for me to like even be, I guess, where I am mentally and even in YouTube. Like if 2020 was like normal, quote unquote, I doubt I would have started the Asmara channel this year. Because I'm one of those people, like, I can make excuses for myself of why I can't do things. Like, I don't have a gaming PC. How am I going to make gaming videos or gaming-related videos without that? Or just, I'm definitely very prone to, like, putting stuff off. And so I definitely feel like 2020 was a huge growing year, a learning year, and just a very necessary year. So obviously it's been kind of, like, hard and, like, for, you know, many reasons, but it definitely had to happen. And so I'm grateful for, I guess, the ways I've grown over this past, it's been a year at this point.
Yeah. That's crazy. Oh my gosh. Like it's all about like personal growth. And I remember I made a tweet about it. I think it was last year and also this year that I'm not going to let 2020 or 2021 ruin my personal growth and happiness. And like, I'm not going to allow it to affect me badly. I want to be able to move forward and go forth in my endeavors and achieve things that I wanted to achieve for so long, because I've always felt that if you don't try, you don't succeed. So.
Yeah, that's definitely a good outlook or like way to look at it.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if you have a first impression of me, because I always ask my guests of this. But like, what was your first impression of me, if you remember?
Okay, the thing is, I've been like in and out of the Sims community for like a few years now. Like, I think I started really heavily following Simmers like when I started high school. So mm-hmm. I like have known of you for a while. Like, I've known you done collabs with like other creators. I've like seen your videos and your channel before. I don't really know what my first impression was. Mm-hmm. I want to say, I think my first video I saw of yours was the collab you did with Lil Simsy, like the build collab. I think it was Sims 3.
Oh,
I
want to
say that's one of the first times I found your channel.
Oh my gosh, that was so long ago. I think that was like 2016.
Yeah.
Oh my. I remember that build vividly. I think it was like a country traditional home or something like that. Oh,
a blue
man.
Suburban.
Probably. Oh my gosh. That was a long time ago. Ooh.
Yeah. I don't know if I had like a like opinion or like I can't think of anything. But I'm curious to know, what is your first opinion of me?
Honestly, I think my first impression of you, like when I first found about your channel, was kind of around the time of like, I think this year, when you made the video documentary essay about why The Sims 4 is the way it is, like what's happening with The Sims 4 and everything. And I was so like gravitated towards that. And I'm like, ooh, it's so good, well edited.
How did you find out about it?
I think it was like some, like, you know how on Twitter where people, if you like something, it like, and you follow that person who liked that tweet and it appears on your timeline. So I think I found it through that way, like a mutual like person that I follow liked your tweet and ended up on my timeline, and then a video played and I'm like, I want to know more about this. So I clicked on it And so I started like watching it. I'm like, I need to watch more. So I went over to your YouTube channel and I was already hooked, because even though you like Sims, but what I liked is that variety. Like, I love like the variety in your channel where you're not just a dedicated Sims channel. And I think for the longest time, I think this year, well, last year and this year, I had a realization of like, I don't want to be just known for one thing. And I wish I could like diversify my content. And I'm doing that now. But I think I'm starting to see where I'm loving creatives who do step out of their quote unquote comfort zone and diversify their content where they can make content that they are most proud of and feel the most creative like doing it. Whether you stream, whether you make documentary series about Sims, Roblox, Minecraft, whatever you want to do, I think it's very, I would say, impactful to see that stuff among creators. And I think that's where kind of how I loved more about watching you. And then also, like, you know, the creator on the rise, I'm like, okay, so that's a thing.
And that was like a surprise to me when that happened.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you that too. I'm like, what was the experience like? Because I asked Miss Sim Reno, she was also creator on the rise, like of, I think, last year. And I was like, do they just like put you on there and then that's it? And then you just like, oh, okay, I guess so. I don't know.
They send you an email like a couple of days before saying that you're going to be featured. And then it happened. So yeah, that was definitely a crazy experience. It was the last day of February. I remember that. I remember some of my friends from like school, or like even people from like high school, like were like texting me like, is this you on the, the gaming creator on the rise page? Because I haven't talked to my YouTube channel about, like, I don't talk a whole lot about it like in real life. There are people who aren't really in, you know, the online space. And so that was definitely a strange experience. People texting me like, oh, are you on trending? Like, what is this?
Yeah, so, yeah, I was, oh, that's crazy. Because I always like wonder what that even was like. Because YouTube, you know, is just YouTube and they do the most. But it's nice to know that they send you an email ahead of time that, oh, you're going to be trending. Good luck. Because Miss Breno said she got an email and they said, you're going to be trending. Have fun. And good luck. I'm like, well, thank you, I guess, question mark. And then it just,
yeah,
it went crazy. Like, it's so weird how the algorithm picks up things. And like, when I see like people trending on like the gamer on the rise or creator on the rise, I'm like, of course they probably have uploaded videos more than 3 months. I'm like, we got to check them out even more. And of course you uploaded more than that. But I'm like, and I always ask myself, why those videos? And I watch them like, oh, it makes sense, because those videos are very engaging and impactful, and they have so much knowledge to like offer, whether it's Sims or documentary series. And like, did you ask yourself like that self question, like, why those videos?
I don't think I really thought about it. I don't really know how they choose the videos that like go on the trending. I'm definitely guessing the Sims documentary is up there, because that was the one that boosted my channel like the most, like the fastest. And then they also featured Growing Up Black on YouTube Gaming. That was the first video I uploaded to that channel.
Yeah.
And what's the other one? Then they uploaded Sims 3 University Life video.
Yeah.
I love the Sims 3. And so, yeah, I don't really know why they chose those. I guess because it was kind of like a different perspective on like gaming content. Like, obviously the What Happened to the Sims 4, that's like more of a documentary styled video. And then you have like Growing Up Black on YouTube Gaming, that was more like commentary, but about the gaming space. And then also they might have put it up there because it was Black History Month. I don't know, but that's just a guess. And then The Sims 3 was like, I guess, a classic just gameplay video. So I'm guessing maybe because it's like three different types of videos, but all still related to gaming.
And I think that's what, you know, people are wanting to see, like the true authentic self of who's behind the voice or the camera, or like who makes them. And it's definitely very cool to like learn more about the person. And I guess like if with YouTube, they pick those videos because themselves are, they like them. And so they think other people will like them and they just go for it. And then that's just like, I don't know.
I wonder how the conversation starts. Like how, who at YouTube like is like, okay, this is the creator we're going to feature and these are the videos we're going to feature. Like, do they watch them? I mean, I don't know. I don't know how it works.
Oh, I don't know either. I feel like they do watch them in some way because it's not robots. We all think it's robots, but it's like real actual people. But do they really watch the videos? Like Susan doesn't watch the videos probably. Who knows? I don't know. She has too much on her plate anyway.
Yeah, Susan's doing too much. We'll just see.
She needs to calm down. But I think that maybe they do watch the videos where they see like the analytical side of it, but also like what do they think of it, you know?
Yeah. Again, it would be interesting to know like the process of how it actually came to be, because I honestly don't even know how they or why they chose the videos they did. But I think they were like a good, pretty good reflection of my channel at that time. So I will say though, one of the negative parts that I think YouTube or I don't really like they need to have better moderation for is like the comment section when you're on the explore page, like all the trolls and the people who don't really care kind of come into the comment section, like people who aren't really actively trying to learn and like not like true fans or anything like that.
Yeah.
So that is one thing they could do better, Susan, if you're listening.
That would be a dream.
The comment moderation is like one of the things that's kind of like jarring, because you go from like you know, a normal, you know, peaceful kind of comment section to people who actually, you know, are watching your videos because they find it interesting, to like just randoms coming in because you're on the explore page. So but altogether it's definitely more positive, but that was definitely an experience of when that happened and an influx of people just came.
Yeah. Because I always assume where, like, your true fans, subscribers, your community will go forth and bring positivity to the comments section and, like, block out all the trolls. Like, they'll be more positive than negative. And I think that with YouTube, I do hope that they one day, figure out the comment moderation, because some of the stuff is weird. Like, I don't know if you ever get this at all, but whenever I upload a video, or sometimes very rarely, it's like a random spam comment that literally makes no sense. And I'm like, I've never seen this person before. Or like they'll spam a link and I'm like, no, goodbye.
Oh yeah. I blocked links like the moment my thing went on Explore and like random people started, you know, posting random links. Yeah. You can, I went ahead and blocked those so people can't post links in my comments.
Yeah. I've done that now because, I mean, it's easier because stuff you see on those comment sections are very weird.
Yeah.
So
the internet is a strange place.
It is. I don't understand it. I've been on the internet for nearly a decade and I'm like, what is this? I don't understand anymore. It's changed for the worse, but, you know, sometimes the best. Depending on how you look at it, I guess. I wanted to ask you, like what led you to make your YouTube channel? Who made you, like, what keeps you like going back to it every week or so when you post a video?
I think the main catalyst for starting this channel, because I've had, you know, some YouTube channels in the past, but I eventually, you know, kind of stopped uploading to them when I sort of lost interest. But this channel, I feel like, was specifically sort of the catalyst was definitely year 2020, kind of being forced to, you know, sit down and like really listen to yourself and like what you want. And so starting a new YouTube channel was something I've been thinking about for a while, but I just wasn't really sure what I wanted to do or what path I wanted to do it down, if I wanted to do gaming or something else. And if so, like how was I going to make, I guess, my channel sort of unique and sort of, you know, different from like the crowd. So definitely the wake of Black Lives Matter 2020, when everyone started talking about, everybody and their mother started talking about Black Lives Matter. I remember listening to a podcast by, it was a bunch of different Twitch streamers, and I know X Mirror Mirror was one of them. There was like I Am Brandon TV. I don't know if you've part of that. Yes. Some other people.
Yeah, yeah.
But I remember they were on like a podcast where they just talked about their experience just being Black in the world, but also being Black on like YouTube gaming specifically, or being a Black Twitch streamer. Yeah. And I think it reminded me of, it kind of was a reaffirmation listening to that podcast that like, you're not crazy as a Black person. Sometimes when you have certain experiences, or you weren't sure if something is, I guess, fair racially, I was able to relate it back to like being in high school and in like the Sims community and never really seeing, or just in gaming in general, and never really seeing Black creators, never really seeing people make Black Sims, or really any Sims of color. Like, let's just be honest. Like, if you look at YouTube, gaming YouTube or Sims YouTube, like five years ago compared to now, like if you go through Let's Plays, you go through Tumblr, like it is a very stark difference.
Yes, I was guilty. Honestly, I full-heartedly, I was guilty back then because I couldn't see myself within the games I was playing. Like, The Sims, I love The Sims. I've been playing for so long, but I literally could not see myself within the game. And I was just gravitated towards, quote-unquote, the norm of what people would think. And I think nowadays is that we need to step up and rise to what we need to see, what needs to be changed within the video game industry the video game industry, because I feel like it's so stereotypical of making Sims or making characters that don't look like you. But nowadays, gaming devs are now changing and listening to the community, to saying, we want this, we want that. True representation matters, because if you can't see yourself within the game, then there's no point of actually, you know, playing it anymore. And
yeah, companies are being held like accountable.
Yes, yes. And I'm so glad that Mira is a force to be reckoned with, let me tell you. I am so happy that I got to meet her at Sims Camp, because there was a time back at Sims Camp was a thing so many years ago. I remember, like, in my mind, I never was like a very like person that would speak out on things sometimes, like back then. Now I do, but back then when I got invited to Sims Camp, I always felt, and I knew I shouldn't feel this way, but like in my heart, I felt like I was literally the only Black male simmer being, quote unquote, recognized in the eyes of EA in the simming community, because I did not know any other Black simmer, male simmer in the space that was, I guess, at the size that I am or at the recognition that I was at. And it just felt like all the weight was on my shoulders to be the best of the best and be so good at what I do.
To like represent the community.
Yeah. And I'm like, I don't like that pressure. And I always strive to like recommend, like if EA or anybody ever asks me, like, do you know any like other Black sim male creators or any Black, you know, creators in the gaming space or anyone, like, yes, this person, that person, that person, that person. Like, I am Brandon, you know, X-Mira, Ebonic Sims, Sims Fan 93. Like, there's so many people out there that make so much amazing content that they should be highlighted way more. And I'm so glad that people are doing that nowadays, where they're recognizing Black creators do exist. And it's
perfect. Exactly. And I think a lot of people, like, they want to say, like, oh, like, we just don't know Black people. And it's like, that's because you ain't looking for them. Like, you ain't seeing Black faces because you're not actually trying to, like, go out of the algorithm or, like, the white standard of a creator and seek that out. And I think sometimes also we have to understand that Black creators come in, a variety of different forms. Like, we're not all the same. We don't all speak the same. We don't all use the same slang. Exactly. We don't all, like, make the same type of content. So you can't just pigeonhole Black people and, like, I don't like that creator, so all of them must be like that. Or sometimes we'll pigeonhole ourselves into only watching creators that might agree with our respectability politics. Like, if they speak in a way that I agree with. Or I think sometimes, like, Black culture can be seen, because Black culture is not seen as the norm. So when Black creators, you do see Black creators, it like almost kind of takes people aback that they're not kind of fitting into what we have imagined the typical gamer, I guess, to be like, or the typical white male gamer. Like, hey, what's up, you guys? try to smash that like button. Like, we're not all like that.
No.
So I think sometimes people need to just kind of, it's great for people to actually see the diversity even within the gaming space. And also what you were saying earlier of how, like, you even felt guilty about having to be like the sole Black representative or those types of things. Like, I think it's also important to recognize that, like, the forces of, like, white supremacy and upholding, I guess, a standard of what we should be socially, that mm-hmm. is something that affects everybody and not just, you know, white people or Black people or just one particular group. And so we all, I feel like, have to be held accountable for normalizing that, like, white is not standard. Like, white is not default.
Yes.
And when you recognize all these different diverse creators in the space, we actually, like, normalize that there is not one particular standard of person. So yeah, I just went on kind of like a long tangent, but that is definitely something we need to get better at with the gaming community. And that definitely did inspire me to start my channel, because I kind of wanted just to make this channel sort of like a love letter to a younger version of myself who mm-hmm. didn't see Black people in gaming, who didn't see a whole lot of people in gaming, like playing the games that I liked and sort of a part of the communities that I was a part of. I didn't see a whole lot of people playing with Black characters or speaking from a culture that I understood. And so I know what that feels like now, like when I went out of my way to go find those creators. I know what it feels like now to feel seen and feel heard by people in your community. So
yeah,
I definitely wanted to be that representation and also just be the person I would have wanted to watch when I was younger. And that definitely did not have as much exposure when I was younger. So yes, there's definitely a long way to go in the gaming industry, but I'm really glad that companies are actually being held accountable now and people mm-hmm. are, because once you know, like once you're aware, it's hard to ignore it. So yes, I think that's the first step.
Definitely the first step to definitely like see the growth in yourself, but other people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I grabbed a tweet from your Twitter and it was like way back in February. And what resonated towards me is that you said, "This channel represents something so much bigger than me. I couldn't be more grateful for the events that drove me to start creating again and all the love and support I've received thus far. This is truly only the beginning to a larger legacy I want to build in this world." And that's so cool. I like that. Like when I see people's like tweets, I always feel like there's like a deeper meaning behind it. But I'm like, they're so well spoken that I'm like, wow. Like it's like an eye opener. It makes sense.
Thank
like
you.
When looking at your channel, I see where you're building, like from where you started from like on October to where you are now, you've built that over time. You've grown in your skills, your speaking skills, I guess, I don't know. But like you have grown so much that I've seen the growth and I'm seeing the legacy being built bigger and bigger and seeing making these creative things. Like you, I believe you are a filmmaker. You have like the best video editing quality, like skill, and like what?
Thank you. Yeah, I've been making videos since I was about 11.
Oh, wow.
And they did not all look like this, obviously. It's really just been honing this craft over the past, like pretty much like half my life, right? I was mm-hmm. 11. I'm 19 right now. I'll be 20 in a few months. But yeah, pretty much like half of my life, I've been working on this craft and like working on making videos. And so, yeah, I've taken different film classes. And I originally thought my major in college is going to be documentary filmmaking.
Mm-hmm.
And so right now it's just sort of like general communications. But that was definitely like, I knew I wanted to tell stories. I know I was attracted to nonfiction stories. And so I definitely wanted to implement that in my channel. And definitely a huge inspiration. I don't know if you've heard of D'Angelo Wallace,
mm-mm,
his YouTube channel. Okay, so he is a commentary channel and he makes like giant videos. Well, he's two channels. In one of his channels, he does like these really long like video essays about like different topics or stuff that's going up on like different stuff that's happening on YouTube or in the world. I don't know how to explain it, but he's a commentary channel. He's very good. And he did a video series about like some drama that was going on in the beauty community on YouTube.
Oh my God.
And it was just very well edited. He's very calm presenting his information. And he definitely, I drew a lot of inspiration of sort of mixing my knowledge in sort of filmmaking from school, documentary filmmaking from school, and then also kind of combining YouTube style. I know D'Angelo was definitely a very big inspiration for like that type of content. But yeah, I don't know what your question was originally, but I hope that answered it.
Oh no, it did. And I don't know, when you said you were 19, I'm like, I feel so old. I'm 25. Oh, it's like, okay. The other thing I wanted to say is that the generations, like the millennials and Gen Zers are, I would say Gen Z has become more eye-opening of finding what makes them them. And millennials are, I think, also the same, but we're still figuring things out. Where do we draw the line? But I think mm-hmm. that it's so cool to see a new generation's like upbringing in the world and see how they do things. And it's so eye opening. Like, ooh, I want to try that too, and see an experiment and try what's not the norm, you know. And it's just nice. Mm-hmm. And I've also learned that I am a millennial and a Gen Z. So I'm a Zillennial.
Are you in the middle? I was about to ask. I don't know what the difference is or what the, like, I don't know what the year is. Yeah. I feel like every source has like a different definition.
Yeah. And I don't know.
And also, where does Gen Z begin?
Gen Z begins, I think, at the year 1996. And I was born 1996.
That's a lot more people than I expected. That's in Gen Z then.
Yeah, because it says that it starts, like, there's so many articles and everything that says Gen Z is the newest generation, born between 1997 and 2012/15.
They should just say young people. Like,
literally. I'm like, I don't understand. This makes no sense. Like, one says 97, one says 96. And another one even says Gen Z are as people born from 95 to 2010. And I'm like, make up your mind, people. Where do we like draw the line? Where am I at?
Yeah. Everybody got a different interpretation. So hopefully we'll figure that out one day.
One day, like, we need like a true understanding of like what is what. I think it became very confusing where like millennials became a thing and then Gen Z. It's like our two generations are the most confusing because we make mm-hmm. no sense to like the older generation. So we have to educate them of like, we are this way and you were that way. Like, things have changed. We have now the internet and phones that are bigger than our head. So yeah,
I guess like a good way to describe it would be like people who grew up with like the internet, like Gen Z kids are like people who grew up with the internet in the way we understand it now.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, but like technology has changed so fast, which makes it kind of hard to define, I guess, a generation, because it's not like we have like, I feel like the technology industry is really what I feel like shapes the younger generation, but like it also changes very rapidly. Because even in like my lifetime, where like, you know, I've always grown up with the internet, it's still like weird to see or how quickly technology has changed, even in like the short years like I've been alive.
You know? Yeah, same.
So yeah, that'd be interesting. I'm not a scientist, but that'd be interesting to explore what's actually makes a generation, or who is actually Gen Z and why.
Oh, I want to have a whole podcast episode about that. Like, I want to know. Oh, that'd be so interesting, like so knowledgeable. Like, I now understand the true meaning of life. Would you say that YouTube has changed your life in a good way?
Definitely. I feel like I've definitely been on the platform for a long time. I think I started my first channel like in 2013. Mm-hmm. And then obviously I started this channel in 2020. But I've seen the platform go through a lot of different changes. I've definitely been a part of several different like kind of online communities. And so especially with starting the Yes Mara channel, I've definitely noticed, I just feel very inspired to create. Like, I have a new, I guess, passion sort of driving my content creation that I didn't have, I think, with other channels. And I think because I feel like very connected to this channel because it's drawing off of my own personal experience. And also, again, like I said earlier, the content that I would have wanted to see just even, you know, 5-6 years ago. So I feel like it's been good for me personally. Like, this channel has been very healing. And it's also great to see people in my comments, especially like other young Black girls or other Black women, saying that like I love how I can feel seen and like represented in your channel in the different like social issues you explore in your video essays, or just by merely existing and just sort of being myself. I think this channel has represented sort of me sort of just becoming me, essentially, and just being more comfortable with myself. Yeah, I just want Asmara to be a reflection of me. And it's definitely just been very good for me. And I've also really loved hearing the responses from my audience.
I like that. And I was watching one of your videos a couple of months back of like you, the creators that made my year and lessons of 2020 video. And it was so, I didn't watch the whole thing, but I was like, I listened to it. And like what really stood out to me is like the quote that you said from a book, Malaine. And
oh, yes, that's my favorite.
It's so good. I need to read it, but like I now understand why you love that
book.
Wait,
which was it? The was it the your wait, which quote was that? Was that like when you
So you said in your creators that made my year and lessons of 2020 video, and it the quote that you read said, "I realize that if we aren't vigilant, we move through our entire lives feeling smaller than we actually are by playing it safe, by unconsciously giving away our power, by dimming our radiance, by not recognizing there is always so much more waiting for us on the other side of fear. But when we are brave enough to go through, to grab what we want, to tap into who we are, damn, it feels good." And like that is so, so good. Like it was literally eye-opening.
I love that quote. Yes, oh, her book, like, truly is something that has changed my life, or like has changed my perspective. And I'm so glad I found it, like, at the age I am. I don't know. Her book was just like it came at like the perfect time of my life when I was trying to figure out, I guess, like what I want to do. I was in like what I want to do about school and like what I want to study in college. Like what I want to do with my career. Like her book of her just kind of talking about her life and her experience growing up as a Black woman in a creative industry, being sort of like the first but only to do a lot of the things that she did. I don't know, her words and just the way she puts things, it definitely impacted me. She is such a phenomenal writer, communicator, and that book just I love it. But yeah, that's just one of her many, many great quotes.
Yeah, I can see it. I love quotes that speak life into people and quotes that have a sense of like, that's more than just a, like, it's more than just a quote. It means something to that person where it could relate to not just themselves, but to other people. And it's like an eye opener of a true meaning of life. And it's so, and now I want to read it. Like, I want to read more of her books.
It's such a good book. You know, it's also really good to listen to. I was reading her book while listening to her read it, her audiobook.
Ooh.
That's also a really good read. Like, I like hearing authors speak their own words. So that's my little tip.
Me too. I feel like it's better that way. Like, if the author reads it, then you kind of understand than somebody else reading it, you know?
Yeah. You like feel like it's like an experience. I don't know. You feel it coming from them.
Yeah. And there was something that I was reading. I don't know, like it's like I'm on her Twitter, and the first tweet that pulled up to me from Elaine, and like it's like so well spoken, but it's so short. Like the quote, it reads, "Our struggle is not the struggle of a day, a week, a month, or a year. It is a struggle of a lifetime. Be persistent and consistent, we shall overcome." And that was for the John Lewis Good Trouble. And I'm like, oh my gosh.
She's such a good communicator.
True. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Like this whole thing of like being Black in the gaming industry has been an eye opener for me. Like last year, and I guess 2019 too, has been an eye opener. Like 2019 to now, I was like, oh my gosh. I didn't realize, because all my life I've always felt that I wasn't, I guess, quote unquote, Black enough, you know? And people
Ooh, that's
always,
what my video essay is about on Saturday. It will already be up by the time this podcast, you know, probably goes up. But I'm glad you mentioned that, because that's actually exactly what I'm talking about. But go ahead and continue.
I will link that in the show notes for sure when it airs. like, I guess, like, for the longest time, people always said, oh, you don't seem black. You seem so white. And I'm like, what does that even
undercover
mean?
Undercover racist.
Like, I don't understand. Mentally, that made me so unstable for so long that I honestly was like, am I even black? But no, I am. I know I'm black, but I don't feel, you know?
Yeah, I definitely have heard that a lot. Like, it's crazy. Like, how many black people I've heard, people told them, you're the whitest black person I've ever met. I'm like, how did that doesn't even make sense? And also, first of all, that's based on your own prejudices of what you think black people should be. Mm-hmm. And so, in my opinion, that's an undercover racist. But, yeah, my video essay definitely dives deep into that. And so I'm really glad that you brought that up. The world is going to make us always trying to make us feel not black enough or too black. Like, it's literally, you can never win. You're either too black or you're not black enough. And exactly. So that's another reason I wanted to create my channel, just to show that, like, you are enough kind of as is, no matter whether you fit stereotypical qualities of blackness or your identity group or not. And so I'm hoping by, like, being myself and just showing up authentically can inspire other people to do the same. And there's not one way to be black, because there's as many ways to be black as there is black people in the world. And so, like, pigeonholing yourself into this, like, small minded mentality of, like, what you can be or what you can't be as a black person is, like, not helpful, because white people get to walk into the world being whatever it is that they want. Like, they get to walk in the world with nuance and nobody like cares. But as soon as you see a black person, people have all these perceptions of what they should be or what they could be. Like, my dad, for example, he is a very, he looks like a very, like, stereotypical black man. He's tall, broad shoulders. I can't tell you how many times we have been in random places with strangers who, like, we've never talked to before, and just go up and say, do you play football?
Oh,
what team do you play for? Like, nothing about this situation is indicating that he's a football player. He's not wearing a jersey. He's not, like, there's nothing about this, our presence, is indicating that he's a football player. But you see a tall, broad black man and he must play football. Or you see a tall black man, oh, he must be a basketball player. Like, how about you ask me what I do, as opposed to you assuming? Like, people might not assume somebody who looks like my dad is in finance and is in business and has a law degree. Like, we need to dismantle, like, this idea of the only thing we can associate or the only thing we could have in common with a black person is sports or athletics. And that's just one example of many. But yeah, like, nobody is going to go up to a random white person and be like, oh, so do you play football? Like,
no. Oh yeah. My gosh, it's just so, it's hard. But it's also like, we gotta step up and tell people who we are, because if we don't, they won't know.
Exactly. Like, actually,
it's like, this is what I am. This is who I am. Mm-hmm. It's like, also, I don't know if you watched, you probably have watched, I don't know, but the movie Black Panther was like, oh, love it.
Oh, such, yes, a good movie. I've seen that, like, so many times.
Same. Like, the one thing that the mom says, like, show who you are. And, like, yeah, love that. Love that saying. And it's like,
yeah,
we got to show who we are, because if we don't, they won't know. And we have to, like, step out.
They'll determine it for us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of where The Sims comes into play.
Nice segue.
Where, you know, thank you. But where The Sims comes into play, where it's like, where it started in the year 2000 and to where it's now, people in the gaming industry and, like, us as players, we have definitely changed with the game, where we've spoken about our opinion about the game and how it should improve and what should be taken out or what should be more focused on. And it's kind of reassuring to know that now, I mean, I guess back then they were somewhat listening, but it wasn't really as effective to where it is today, where nowadays,
like, as in, like, the skin tones and stuff.
Yeah, the skin tones, the hairs. Hopefully one day pronouns will be a thing. But I have to say, what was so impactful, I think ever since, I would say The Sims sparked was the show. And I think that was like a stepping stone, or I guess back when we started voting for the community stuff packs for lingerie stuff and Nifty Knitting, like back then to now, it's like they're learning as they go, where they're letting the community vote on what should be involved in the packs, to where they're letting people in the community build and make families for the pack, to where they're now allowing custom content creators making their like passionate content, whether it's, you know, hairstyles or skin tones or makeup, to be put into the game permanently for other players to see themselves within the game. And it's like a breath of fresh air to know that we're seeing the change in a good way. And I hope it improves like over time. And I think watching your documentary series about Sims, like the history of The Sims, it was very eye-opening to understand, like, I didn't, like, even though I've been playing it for so long, it made me start to think even more of like, oh, we had these things in the past and it hasn't changed, but now it's changing. But does your opinion still stand that The Sims 4 is slowly improving, but there still needs to be a change, like a bigger change?
Like, of the overall sort of game and the experience playing The Sims 4?
Yeah.
I still... The Sims 4 is just a different game in the series, quite honestly. It's definitely the most they've deterred, I guess, from the previous Sims games. And so it's just a different experience, and some people like it and some people don't. Yeah, I'm not, honestly, I don't really play The Sims 4. Like, I'm gonna just be honest. I don't keep up with the updates as much as like I used to. I've seen like the little community updates over time. Like, I heard we're getting a black hair swatch, or that already happened or something like that. And like, I've seen those kind of So I've seen those like little improvements over time, which is definitely a step in the right direction, like, you know, listening to what the community actually, you know, wants. I just feel like it's just a different game. They just went in a different approach. And I'm just honestly just hoping that maybe in Sims 5, they do more of what they did in the past. Go back to sort of that original path they were on.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that hopefully that they do start to implement things that were in the past, but improve them. Like, they, what did they do? I think they add in like toddlers. From the toddlers in the past, I feel like that they're, I wouldn't say necessarily better, like they're somewhat similar but improved. And like, there's like pools, and now we have bunk beds within the game. Even though like this is like more of a beginner stage of bunk beds in The Sims 4, it'll improve over time.
They just need to drop a generations pack.
Let's be real here.
Like,
honestly,
we've been waiting for this for how long has The Sims been out? Like 6 years? Generations, like the fourth expansion pack in The Sims 3, something like that.
It was
like four. It was one of the earlier ones.
You know, I have a Sims 3 current house that I'm playing, and I have been having the most fun playing them right now. They are up to their third child, about to have a fourth child. And it's just like, oh my gosh, I love the Sims 3 so much, but I love, but I'm a diehard Sims 2 fan, but I still love Sims 3. But like, Sims 3 was like an eye opener. Like, Generations is got like, hands down, the best stuff in there. It has the most control, the most chaoticness. The family-orientated legacy that I play is in The Sims 3 Generations.
Yeah, The Sims 3 definitely like expanded our perceptions of what could be possible in a Sims game. And so I definitely think that's why The Sims 4 was so like jarring. It's like, we went from all of this stuff and now we're getting like less than the bare minimum. Like, when we got The Sims 4 base game.
It's like, oh.
It's like, it's just, it was just a downgrade. It was unfinished.
Yeah.
It's an unfinished game when we first got it. And they're, you know, making it better now with more packs and stuff. But it's almost like, should it have taken 6 years to get closer to like a full game?
No. I think they even said it was unfinished at the start. I don't know. I don't remember. But all I know, I'm like, why is the map white and blue, and where's the color to everything?
How different The Sims 4 looked when it first launched, until I like went in back and did research. Like, I was watching Let's Plays and stuff. I was like, yo, this was a completely like different game from the start.
I remember it was crazy because, like, I remember when I was playing my LP, and all I know is my baby grew up to be a child. I'm like, you went from 0 to 10 in like 2.5 seconds. Like, what happened here? Where's the middle stage? And like, I think at the time I wasn't thinking about. Yeah, I wasn't thinking about it at the time. Like, no toddlers. Like, okay, whatever. But now I'm like, where's the toddlers?
Yeah, like, I think also I would love to have preteens in The Sims 5. I don't know why they haven't done that yet. I think preteens can have so much gameplay. Like, you could do like acne, you could do like fan clubs, boy bands. There's so much gameplay you could do with preteens. I don't know why they haven't done that yet. So in addition to like the toddler stage, preteens is another thing that I would love to see.
Yeah. A lot of people have actually been wanting preteens for so long, since I guess The Sims 4 even started. But I think for me, mostly, it's like, in a way, I want preteens, but I don't want them to be in like an extra life stage where if they improved on like the children, like a longer lifespan, making them a little bit longer. Oh, like
just add that more to children?
Yeah. Like, they grow over time, where like teenagers in the game with parenthood, they do develop acne and all these other different things, and kind of have like this growth spurt of life.
Okay.
As like they get a little bit older and experience new things. But I think that if they improve on children, it could be somewhat similar. Like, I guess like when you start, like you grow up into a child, but in, like halfway of that child life stage is like your preteen stage. And I then like you kind that. Of experience all those like changes, like acne. I guess your voice could crack maybe, or you could develop some type of like crushes and first loves and hormones this stuff. That'd be so cool.
That'd be cool. Like at the end of the child stage, and also having them like grow gradually would be nice. Having growing pains, you know, EA, if you're listening, hello, like take notes,
please do.
yeah, that'd actually be a good idea, because it's like, I don't know, I always felt it was weird kind of to age up from 10 to like 16.
Yeah.
You know, from 0 to 10, 10 to 16. I like that.
Because I think like, if they did add like a preteen stage, I feel like it wouldn't be as, I guess, quote unquote, polished as the teens and children are, where they would have to focus on a whole new life stage that they develop from scratch to make it like equivalent to what it is today with the other life stages. So I don't know, I just improving on the other old ones will be like a little bit better to give them more a sense of self, you know?
Yeah.
That's just me.
How long do you think The Sims 4 is going to go on for?
Oh gosh. So it's September 14th, I think, 2014, somewhere around that time, I forget. So 2014, it's 2021. They said last year, or 2019, that they have a few more years of The Sims 4, and we're coming up on the year 7. So I'm going to assume 3 more years, like 10 years of The Sims 4. That's what I think. That
sounds like so weird.
I don't like it.
We're going to have like, what, 80 stuff packs?
Okay, I don't want to. Oh, gosh.
Kits, I'm actually really curious to see how many stuff packs is actually going to be at the end. I just remember that was the first pack or type of pack they released like so often that it's like, what is it? Like, do you watch LGR? Like his reviews? You know how he had like Ralph where he would cut off the limbs every time there's a new stuff pack?
Yep.
I'm just really curious like of how many more they're going to make, or just packs in general.
I feel like, because usually we get expansion packs every year, sometimes every 2 years. Like we get 2 a year, but it's been like once a year. But I feel like we could get at least maybe 4, maybe 5 more expansion packs, and then stuff packs, I don't want anymore. We have too many. I can't keep track of them all. Like, I barely play the early ones anymore. Like, Luxury Party Pack, I don't play anymore.
I forgot really that even existed. Luxury Party, Cool Kitchen.
Oh, yeah. Those two I don't play. But I play with the Country Kitchen Kit. I play with that all the time. But Cool Kitchen, I don't play with. I don't like the ice cream. I don't use the fridge or stove. So I don't really use it. Luxury Party Pack is like, it's too much for me. And I don't have like special events anymore because I'm a family game player, but I also like chaos. So I end up having my Sims have affairs. So like they get married and for a short time they divorce. And then like, what's the point of having a chocolate fountain and buffet table? We can do that at the wedding the first time around, maybe your second, third, maybe fifth wedding. But after that, no more. But
the thing about stuff packs is like a lot of it is like a lot of times people like custom content creators will just make the like clothes and just like have it as custom content or like redo the clothes, make it like kind of cuter for you to download.
Yeah.
And so I don't really know. Like, I feel like I would rather invest my money in like an expansion pack that's actually expansive and has a lot of different features in it, even if all the other features aren't necessarily completely fleshed out. Like, I'd rather invest my money in something that's going to last me longer than a stuff pack that has like maybe two cute dresses and like an ice cream machine. Like, I don't know. I just don't really see that as like worth it for me personally, but I guess it is something to like, they're like little kind of add-ons you can have on your game like every once in a while when you get bored. But
yeah,
I'd rather just have expansions. Like, give me completed packs.
Yes.
Please and thank you.
Oh, the other thing too is like Get to Work and then Journey to Batuu. I feel like it could have been not combined together, but if there was a way that we could have improved aliens, that's what I thought Journey to Batuu was going to be. Because I watched, I think it was Gamescom, and I'm like, I'm waiting for the next Sims announcement. Like, where's it at? I saw all the Star Wars stuff, and I'm like, I love Star Wars. I'm a fan of Star Wars, but please don't let there be a Sims one. Because I don't know. They could have done it. They could have made it a lot better than it was. Like, the idea of it looks so cool. But that's like, you know, you get the game trailer, but then what you get in the game is not what you expect. Like, you see this, but it's not what you get. It's weird. It's like expectations versus reality.
I honestly, I don't even really know what they did with Journey to Batuu. Like, I saw some people's videos and I was just like, look, what game is this? Like, who in the studio was like, yes, do that. Journey to Batuu. Like, what brand deal did they have to sign? Like, what was this?
Well, the thing is, though, I think what I found out is that they were losing their like Star Wars game license. So they had to use it up as much as they could before they lost it. So they were like, Star Wars.
But why
everything.
Couldn't they put that in like a larger pack? Like, they could have done what, a cosplay pack element to a different pack. I don't know if it makes sense. But like,
no, it does.
I don't know. It's The Sims 4. Everything has to be in smaller doses.
It could have been a kit, but I think that it was just so weird. Like, what you were saying, that The Sims 4 doesn't feel real, like it's like an alternate universe. And it is. Like, when you think about it, going back to the older Sims game, the timeline order goes to Sims 3, then Sims 1, and then Sims 2. Then Sims 4 is like the distant cousin that you just don't acknowledge. But you still, like, you know, associate with. And it like, to me, I can kind of see where people are coming from, where The Sims 4 doesn't feel exciting anymore. But like, for me, I think it's exciting just because I make the game fun for me, where I try out different challenges, or like I'll combine my storytelling experience from The Sims 2 or 3 and then put them in The Sims 4 to make it fun for like a long time.
That's like what I talked about in my documentary. Like, people who enjoy The Sims 4 the most definitely have their own ways of making it exciting, like, for them. Are also like willing to put in that sort of work. I don't know. I tried to do some challenges with The Sims 4 like a couple years ago, and I just thought it was weird because literally never have I in The Sims 3 have I had to do a challenge to like try to enjoy the game. And that's just me personally. And so it just wasn't as interesting. I tried Not So Berry, which is a cool challenge. I just didn't get very far. Yeah, I don't know. I just like kind of like having my own stories and sort of being able to create, have a lot of like options of what I can do with them. I don't want to have to download all these mods and to do like basic things. And so that's like my Sims 3 is also preferred for me. I also just have more content in The Sims 3. Like, if I had like more stuff in The Sims 4, I'd probably enjoy it a little bit more. I just know Sims 3 best. I've been playing it longest. I have more stuff for it. And I don't know. It's just like what I'm used to. Sims 3 is like my my safe space. She's my baby.
Nice. I like that. I think Sims 2 is my, like, my child. Like, I can't give it up. It's what I live for. It's what I go back to. I just love causing drama and chaos, especially in Pleasant View. But if, like, we're talking about The Sims 3, OG Sunset Valley.
Yeah. Oh, also Sims 3, one thing, like going into base game unmodded, like default Sunset Valley, So many things are so ugly. Like the houses, the patterns are terrible. The makeup is awful on these Sims.
Oh, gosh.
I'm like, what is this? So, but The Sims 3, like the environments, like the landscapes, gorgeous. The towns, gorgeous. Yeah. It's just like the Sims and just the little things need to be fixed. But yeah, also Sims 2, like I learned this more as just like researching and doing my documentary, is mm-hmm. Sims 2 has definitely the most drama, the most tea. I would love to do a video playing The Sims 2 for the first time because like cheat on your husband, get a mistress.
Oh my gosh. So let me just tell you, when you ever get a chance to play The Sims 2, go to Pleasant View. I mean, the other worlds are great and all, but Pleasant View is where the true tea happens. Like there's literally so much history, like 25 mm-hmm. years of history in that town with the Goth family, Dreamer, Lothario, Calientes, like the OG ones that we all know. The Broke family, yeah. Oh gosh. Like
Will Wright went all out with this one.
He really did. But
he's like, okay, we gonna make this an experience.
The thing is, I researched is that he wasn't actually involved with The Sims 2. Like he got like taken out of it after The Sims 1 ended. So like he had no involvement with The Sims 2. Like he was like acknowledged as like a thanks to it, but he wasn't really involved with it. Yeah, I researched more about him.
Okay, so who? This is like we need like Will Wright interview, official interview. Yep. So what really happened to this game?
That's what I'm trying to do.
But yeah, also I have a question. I remember I put a clip of one of your videos in my documentary. I'm wondering, were you like surprised to like hear yourself or see yourself in that video? I use a lot of different people's clips, but I know I use one of your Pleasant View videos, I'm pretty sure, in
the first part
of the documentary.
Oh, I think it was the first part. I'll have to go back and watch
that. Yeah, it's like a few second clip. You had like a Pleasant View series. I don't know if it was on YouTube or Twitch or both.
It was both. But yeah, I have to go look back at that. Now I'm like, wait, what? Because I just kind of, I listen to a lot of things and never like actually watch a lot of stuff because I'm working on other stuff. But mm-hmm. actually watch it now because I'm like, oh.
Yeah. I'm just curious of what creators thought when they saw themselves in my video or heard them.
But like, you'll know with The Sims 2, there's literally one person that ruins the entire game, and that's Don Lothario. The one person. He has an affair with Cassandra, Nina and Dina Caliente. Katrina Caliente in The Sims 4 does not exist in The Sims 2. But like,
yeah, they made her up.
Yes, there's Nina and Dina Caliente, Cassandra Goth, and then there's a mate, Caitlin Langkert, which is also the Langkert family in The Sims 3. But
wait, isn't that maid having an affair with the Pleasant?
Mm-hmm.
Like the guy from the Pleasant, I forget his name.
Yep, Daniel Pleasant. Yep.
Yeah,
it's crazy because he has an affair so with messy. Four different people. But then also the other thing is that Cassandra also has a crush on Darren Dreamer. But then Darren Dreamer's son, Dirk Dreamer, is dating Lilith Pleasant, who is the sister of Angela Pleasant, who's dating Dustin Broke, where Dustin's Broke father died from a mysterious pool accident, where Brandy is pregnant with a mysterious child who so happens to be pregnant by Skip Broke, who was already dead before that even happened. So it's like,
this is just so much, like this is like a reality TV sitcom type.
It really type is. Thing. It all revolves around one person.
I think the funny thing is that so many of y'all like started playing The Sims when y'all was like 5. I'm like, this is like drama. Like this is real messy stuff for y'all to be playing when you were like 5 years old.
Yes.
But I think that's funny. Sims 2 is definitely the most detailed.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty crazy how detailed that game is.
It's like I go back to it every time. Like I learn something new. I'm like, what in the world? I love so much. I could talk about The Sims 2 all day. It's so good.
New podcast, Sims 2.
Yeah. All the way.
Hello, Sims 2.
All the way. Sims 2 is just so good. I'm going to do a whole video about this, honestly. Let's be real here.
Why The Sims 2 is superior. That's your video title.
Exactly. So, like, what do you like most about The Sims 3? Like, the most, like, why you keep on going back to it and playing it?
I mean, I talked a little bit about this before, but Sims 3 is definitely, like, it was my first game. So, for me, like, Sims 3 kind of, like, established, like, what The Sims is for me. Like, that's what I think of when I think of, like, throwback Sims game is, for me, that's Sims 3. I like how there's so much customization. Mm-hmm. I really like that. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like Sims 3 is just like it's easier for me to make my stories with Sims 3. Like there's just enough like sort of natural drama or tea in the game already. But then I like how I can also tell my own stories and I don't have to necessarily get involved in the drama if I don't want to. So
yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So I like the customization.
Yeah, me too. I did like the customization. And I guess the open world aspect, too, of it, because you could see everything that was happening in the background without having to live at that household where, like, for example, there was, I think, if your Sim cheated on, like, a married Sim, the whole neighborhood would know about it. Like, this so-and-so, oh, a public
menace. The gossip interaction, like, actually mattered.
It's crazy. I'm like, all I was doing was just talking to them. Now I'm like, I'm hated throughout the entire town. Like, what did I do? You can sue people for slander, get flu shots, have a baby in the past or the future. There were so many things in The Sims. And I'm like, what happened?
I actually just got into the future during the recent Sims 3 Origin sale. So I haven't actually played it with it yet. The only two packs I haven't played with are Supernatural and Into the Future. So I'm excited to do that once I play Sims 3 again. But honestly, I'm just having fun playing other games.
Yeah.
Other than Sims. And so I haven't played The Sims in a while.
Yeah. I haven't played The Sims 2 in a while and I kind of want to go back to it. But a little segue, I did want to say that you play other games. I've recently have been seeing on Twitter that you and also YouTube, like you like The Walking Dead Clementine, yes. But you also love Life is Strange. Now, let me just say here, how are you liking Life is Strange?
So, I've played Life is Strange 1. I'm not quite done with Life is Strange 2. I have, like, I'm on the fourth episode. Like, I'm about to finish the fourth, and I have to do the fifth, the last one.
Okay.
So they're two different games. Yes. Definitely. They're two different stories. But honestly, I'm really liking the game so far, Life is Strange 2. I feel like I'm at a point where like the plot is like picking up and like I'm at a point where Sean is going off to find Daniel. Like Daniel had like walked off. I don't know if this is like spoilers for people, but yeah, I'm at the part where they just got, I don't know where they are, but Sean is off looking for Daniel. And like, I don't know. I feel like the plot is picking up right now. I really like the plot. I like the sort of sibling relationship. I think that's interesting. Even though Daniel is annoying, that kid has an attitude throughout the whole game. Like, calm down. He's 9 going on like 16. Like,
it's crazy. But, I'm like, calm down.
Yeah. Daniel's a trip. But yeah, I don't know. I'm liking the game so far. I'm definitely going to make a video like of just kind of talking about it once I'm done with it because, yeah, I'm not done yet. So I feel like I can't give a full, complete review, but like it's definitely picking up. I'm excited to finish it. I'm trying to finish my video that's going up on Saturday before I play more because I already, I'm not trying to overwhelm myself with all these videos I need to edit. So I like to take breaks in between, but I'm definitely liking Life is Strange 2. I love story mode games, story driven games.
Same.
I'm so excited for Life is Strange 3, Life is Strange True Colors. It looks so good.
I already pre-ordered it and everything. I'm like, I'm already sold. Like, you don't gotta tell me twice. I played throughout the entire Life is Strange like franchise, like 1, 2, and Before the Storm, and then Captain Spirit. Like, I played, like, Life is Strange 1 and then Before the Storm, like, in that order, and then it kind of carried on to Life is Strange 2 and a little bit of Captain Spirit. So I like how they're all tied together, where I guess Life is Strange 1 and then Before the Storm are, like, connected with Max and Chloe, where, and then Captain Spirit and Life is Strange 2, they're both connected with Captain Spirit and then Sean and Daniel, of, like, their story and how they kind of come together. And it's so good, but
it's, like, the same universe.
Yeah. And, like, it, the funny thing is, like, Life is Strange 2, I don't know if you've gotten to that point or not in the game, it also connects back to Life is Strange 1 as well.
I saw, like, where they, again, I'm not done with it, but I know at the beginning, like, when you are driving with Brody and they stop at Arcadia Bay, I thought that was, like, a cool little Easter egg. Does it come up, like, is Life is Strange 1 come up again, like, at the end of Life is Strange 2?
No. I don't think so. It's been a while since I last played.
Yeah. See, playing old games is kind of like my brand. but I like how they kind of connect the different games.
Yeah. Get a friend like Brody. He's cool. Like, literally the best. Like, you gave Brody money.
I saw somebody in my subscription feed doing a, like, ranking the Walking Dead characters.
Oh,
and
no.
I think I want to do that for Life is Strange. Do a tier list of characters.
Oh, that'd be so cool.
Oh, that'd be funny. That. All right. Like, I'm going to do that once I'm done. Ranking all the characters.
Like, Brody at the top. Okay, Max, I don't know. She, she's all right. Has her moments. I don't know. Just something about Max was just a lot.
Oh, I don't Frank, know. The bean guy, iconic.
Right. Yeah. Frank was cool.
But oh, the dogs, they're going to be at the top. Pompadour.
Yes. All the way.
Who else? Okay, I might actually make a video on that. That'd actually be fun. The Life is Strange 2 characters.
Yes, but the other game I think you should play is Tell Me Why. No. Yeah, Tell Me Why. It's like...
Well, I've heard about that.
It's so good. I've played it, and it's so emotional. Like, it has, like, the similar feel of Life is Strange. I think it was made by the same people as well, where it's, like, about these two twins, and they have special powers, and it's just, it's so good. The story behind it is really amazing, and I think you'll definitely enjoy it, honestly. I mean, if you ever get a chance to play it.
Yeah, I'd definitely be down for that. I have a few story games I have, like, planned to, like, play or do a let's play on, so I'll definitely add that to the list.
But now I wanted to talk about The Walking Dead. Oh,
I love The Walking Dead. You know what, I recently was watching somebody else's let's play of the series.
Ooh.
And so I just love going back and watching let's plays.
Me too. I was watching a few videos on The Walking Dead, and then I think, like, Until Dawn and
Until Dawn. Oh, those folks got on my nerves. Them teenagers in the woods.
It's like, do you not know cabin in the woods? The woods are
nothing
not safe.
Happens in the woods, like, at night. Like, why? Anyways, you will not catch me in no cabin in no woods. I don't do the snow. No. I don't do that.
No. I can't swim. I do not like nature. I will not go camping. You can't catch me out there. No, thank you. I'll see
you inside.
You will
catch me with air conditioning. Inside, hydrated and conditioned.
Yeah, no bugs flying on my skin. Yeah, I don't think so. I don't know if you feel the same way, but I recently started playing The Walking Dead again for, like, the eighth time now. I own them all. And I just feel so connected to, like, Clementine and Lee's relationship. Like, over time, their relationship has grown so much, and I love how Clementine has grown throughout the game franchise, where she was a little, like, 9-year-old child, and now she's, like, towards the end was, like, 15-16, and, like, the progression of growth and experience in, like, I guess I would call it a pandemic, literally, and the apocalypse. Yeah, it's, like, it's so nice to see that progression, and I've grown, like I was so heartbroken. Like, I can't let Lee die. I can't let Clementine die. And, like, and then AJ became a thing. Like, no, nope, 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 nope. Yeah. I got attached so quickly to all those characters because they felt so real. Like, I could see themselves, like, in person, and then this stuff was actually happening to them. Like, I just want to hold them tight and hug them forever and never let them go.
Yeah, Clementine and Lee, honestly, iconic people. Like, when I hear Lee's voice in other games, like, that's just, like, I just can only think of him as Lee. Like, yeah, I don't...
Same.
It's hard to, like, disassociate the voice actors from their, like, iconic characters or most iconic roles. Like, recently I started rewatching a series of Minecraft Story Mode, and I don't know if you've played that game.
I just finished Minecraft Story Mode Season 1. I'm about to play Season 2. Gabriel?
Ooh. Okay, yes. Yeah. Gabriel is Lee. I had no idea. And I watched this game 5 years ago. Like, I don't know how I'm just now realizing that Gabriel voiced Lee, but I can only hear him as Lee now. Like,
yeah, so. I'm like, is that Lee's voice? Is that you? You're alive.
The man, the legend.
Right. And you know what I found out too? Like, I was researching all the voice actors of, Ivor. I learned, I'm like, that voice sounds very familiar, but I don't know where I've heard it from. It's mm-hmm. Pee-wee. You know, Pee-wee, what was his, he had like this, like all these movies. This like happy-go-lucky character, and I'm like, that voice sounds so familiar. Like, but I don't know. The voice actors they have a very recognizable voice, and like Clementine's voice too is so recognizable. Then like,
yeah,
and I didn't know it was like, you know, a grown woman playing. I'm like, that's talent right there. True.
Wait,
talent,
a grown woman playing honestly. The child version of Clementine?
Yeah, and like she played throughout the entire thing, like. Same character, same person throughout the entire thing, just changed her voice slightly to fit like the age stage of Clementine at the time.
I would love to do voice acting. Like, that's something I think would be so cool to do, like, in the future.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. It seems it's definitely a different set of skills. Like, it would be a challenge, but I think it'd be kind of fun to voice a character in a video game.
It'd be very fun. I've always wanted to do it as well. I've been like, trying to take voice acting lessons, and there's this one person, they call it voiceover camp. It's founded by the same person who does voice acting for The Sims, and she found I want to teach other people about voice acting, and Ketsia, she voice acts for The Sims. And I was like, oh, I must learn about voice acting now, because I want to be able to be a voice actor in video games where, like, I have that recognizable voice and people say have, like, a very calming, you know, well-spoken speaking voice, I guess. I don't know. But I think it'd be very fun to do.
That'd be cool. We'll take voice acting lessons together.
Yeah, definitely. I just got to put my voice over reel together and. Put it to go and then sign up for some roles. And then hopefully for the best, I get some roles one of these days. Oh, yeah. Man.
Let's manifest that.
Yes. 2021 will be our year of conquering our goals. So would you say that you are a goal setter yourself?
Yeah, it depends. Like when it's stuff like I'm really passionate about, like with YouTube, I had certain goals that I wanted to hit. And so I definitely set goals for like my YouTube channel. Yeah, I guess it just depends. Like if I'm really passionate about something. Yeah.
Oh, that's good. Same here. I'm always like, I always do like a goal setting list of like, what do I want to achieve this year? Whether it's YouTube related, personal related, business related. Like I have now decided to make my YouTube channel my business. I've already signed up for an LLC. I've got it.
Oh, I was actually thinking about, I was talking to my dad about doing that recently.
It is a smart way to do it, to kind of, yeah. Because now that you're monetized and everything, earning income,
it's and you smart. Can also, it's like a good way to like protect yourself in case something would come up in the future. But then also like to learn like business stuff along the way, which would be cool.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I should follow through with that. But yeah, me and my dad were talking about that recently.
Yeah, I think it's smart because like now you can utilize things like I've learned that for every game that I've bought, I can write off on my taxes.
As a business expense. Yeah. I was actually thinking about doing that before I get my PC. And so when I get my PC, I can do that as a business expense because that's going to cost a lot of money.
Exactly. I'm getting a new one too. So writing that off as I go, keeping all my taxes in order. Mm-hmm. Well, this is the end of the podcast. But before we go, I wanted to ask you some rapid fire questions, even though I don't know why I always do this, but they're not really rapid fire because these questions are just like tend to overexplain. But anyway, the first question, what is your favorite game you've played thus far?
The first thing I want to say is The Walking Dead. I actually haven't played The Walking Dead. I've just seen watch other people play it, but that's definitely one of my favorite games.
Okay. Okay. Good. Good. Knowing what you know now, what advice would you give to your younger self?
Keep being you and to show up authentically. Like being yourself is your greatest superpower.
That's good. I like that one. I'll keep that in mind for myself too. So what's one thing you're excited about that's coming up in 2021?
I haven't really thought. I haven't thought about that. I feel like because 2020, like nothing went as planned that I kind of like stopped having like long-term expectations. I guess just continuing the YouTube channel and turning, I guess, my media production in general into a small business. Yeah, I'll say that.
Okay. I like that. You know, personal and professional growth. We love to see it. Also, what does success mean to you?
Success means... These are like deep questions.
I know. I'm sorry.
I think just like pursuing what you think is, I guess, like your purpose for like this season, like keep like success is like, you know, putting one step in front of the other and chasing your purpose. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Well, thank you so much for being a part of my podcast again, honestly.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, definitely. I love talking to people and I'm so glad I started this podcast because I feel like that a lot of people don't really get to see or hear their like favorite creators on like another platform, or they only get to see them like one sided for like 30 minutes, an hour, or however long that this is like another perspective of learning more about who they are. And I think it's kind of fun.
Yeah. That's why I love listening to podcasts, like just learning more about people that you don't always get to see like on their platform, their main platform.
Yeah. So where can the listeners find you?
Okay, so the folks can find me. Right now, I just have a YouTube and a Twitter. So on YouTube, you can just search as Mara, ASMARA, or the actual URL is asmaratv, youtube.com/asmaratv. And if you want to follow me, you can follow me on Twitter at Mackenzie Asmara. So that's MackenzieE, Asmara, ASMARA. So yeah.
Awesome. Like that. Well, I'll let you go about your day. Thank you so much again. And yeah.
All right. Well, thank you for having me. Bye.
Goodbye. So I hope you all enjoyed today's episode with Asmara. I definitely sure did, because learning from her on how she became to be on YouTube, where she started and where she is now, and how she's kind of taking one step at a time with her video documenting series and how she's creating her content to be very impactful and immersive and inspire other people to do what she's doing now today, but also kind of talking about the creator on the rise and how her experience was with that, her high highs, her low lows, the benefits that come with it, the disadvantages, and especially talking about why it is so hard to be a Black content creator on the internet, especially on YouTube, and the quote unquote, you're not Black enough quote that a lot of people get in life, especially with Black people. And with this whole podcast, I have always wanted to be able to have open and honest conversations with other creators in the space on how they are feeling about who they are and what they're doing and how they're trying to inspire and make a true lasting impact on the world with their content or just being themselves. And so honestly, I hope you all really enjoyed this episode and learned something from it, because I definitely sure did. But anyway, make sure you go ahead and check out Asmara. All of her links will be down below in the show notes. But be sure to go ahead and follow and subscribe to me on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. And I will hear from you all next week.